So we've got lots going on. I mean, this year we'll have active drilling on two, possibly four projects. So multiple catalysts, multiple projects. And I always like to use a sports analogy. When you can't score unless you put shots on goal, so to speak. And so we've got multiple shots on goal this year in terms of our projects being advanced, either by ourselves or by our partners. So that's kind of the exploration story. Great question. Right now we're currently sitting around $20 million market cap. I think, how would you say, on an asset, if you broke up all the assets on a one-by-one basis and paired them off, any one of our assets could capture most or all of that specific market cap. So, and at some point, like this Humber project I mentioned off the top in Newfoundland, for example, that's going to be drill ready by the fall. We make a discovery there, 7 kilometers of strike length at surface. That could be monstrous, right? And that's where, a discovery hole in something like that's in a market like we have right now, that's what generates significant, upside for our shareholders. And that's just one of the projects we hold, right? So you multiply that over three, four, five projects, well, it starts to look very, very interesting. And I think that in itself is encapsulate the upside. There's more than one project that can drive this value much higher.
Good day, everybody. It's Steve Yang, Natural Resource Stocks here. And I'm talking with Lou Lorick, CEO, Director, Founder of MagnaTerra. Lou, how are you?
I'm great, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm not bad at all. Lou, for those who don't know your story, MagnaTerra, if you want to tell us about your website, your ticker, where you're trading, so people can find you.
Absolutely. MagnaTerra Minerals Inc. Our website address is www.magnaterraminerals.com. We trade on the TSX Venture Exchange here in Canada under the symbol Mary Tom Tom, MTT. Exploration focused company with a deep portfolio of assets in two jurisdictions.
Awesome. Lou, if you want to get into the jurisdictions for us, but if you can kind of give us the 50,000 foot view and tell us what MagnaTerra is all about.
Absolutely. Well, I've been involved in the industry for well over 20 years now, and been a part of five, how would I call it, successful exits as either founder or a significant shareholder, director, you name it. MagnaTerra is kind of our latest iteration of that. We've got a lot of expertise in the Atlantic Canada region, specifically what we call the Appalachian Belt, that runs from literally Greenland through Ireland all the way down into the Carolinas, and of course, circumvents the Atlantic Canada provinces of Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick. And we've been effectively in those jurisdictions for since 2006-7. And the rationale there is we've always felt they were geologically well positioned from in terms of the age of the rocks, major regional fault structures, effectively the geology. To effectively, host large ore bodies, whether it's critical metals or precious metals. We're exposed to both in our company through our flagship projects, focused principally in the provinces of Newfoundland and New Brunswick. We have five, let's see, one, two, three, five active projects, six active projects, I believe, sorry. Five active projects in the two provinces, one of which is under option to another junior, a project called Great Northern. We are the largest shareholder of the company, Gold Hunter Resources Inc. We're a 19% shareholder there. They're advancing that project this year through a 10,000-meter drill program. Our flagship projects are the Humber Copper Cobalt Project in Western Newfoundland. something we staked, no underlying costs, no underlying royalties, etc., other than our own staking costs and exploration costs. We made a walk-up discovery there this past summer. We've now expanded the zone of discovery over 4 kilometers in terms of strike length at surface. Surface copper, running north of 1% copper. What's really interesting here is the geochemical surface anomaly lines up directly with a geophysical mag anomaly. And the mag anomaly right now is extends for a minimum of 3 further kilometers. So there's a potential to see this surface mineralization extend for another 3 kilometers to a total of 7 kilometer strike. So we're onto something there. Very interesting. We'll be advancing that project in 26. We've also got a couple projects that we are also advancing to our own account in New Brunswick. The Rocky Brook project in the Bathurst camp, which is a very famous VMS camp, been in production. Numerous mines have been in production there over the years, going back 50, 60, 70 years. One of the oldest VMS camps in the world. We were attracted to it, not just because of the critical metals or VMS exposure there, nickel, copper, zinc, cobalt, but also a new discovery by another junior that's now been taken up by senior Kinross Gold, of a high-grade gold discovery, in the same belt of rock. So we've established a very large land position there, 30,000 hectares, that gives us exposure both to the VMS horizon and to the gold horizon, and we've been advancing that project, and we'll be continuing to advance that project this year. Let's see here. We also have a portfolio of assets in Argentina, southern Argentina, and the province of Santa Cruz, which in my mind is gold country for Argentina. It's where the largest gold mines in Argentina currently reside. Cerro Negro, operated by Newmont, Cerro Moro, which is Pan American Silver, and Cerro Vanguardia, which is Anglo Ashanti. Again, underexplored, very much a elephant country if you're looking for low sulfidation, precious metals ore bodies. We've got a large portfolio there, 7 projects, over 100,000 hectares. We've recently optioned one of those projects to a company called Lunex Metals. Lunex is in the middle of a drill program. So we've got lots going on. I mean, this year we'll have active drilling on 2, possibly 4 projects. So multiple catalysts, multiple projects. And, I always like to use a sports analogy when. You can't score unless you put shots on goal, so to speak. And so we've got multiple shots on goal this year in terms of our projects being advanced, either by ourselves or by our partners. So that's kind of the exploration story. But the other side of it is we've been able to minimize dilution, and maintain a very, very manageable capital structure. As I said, we have a very deep portfolio. So during difficult times in the junior markets, we were able to generate liquidity in our portfolio through these options and sales and monetization of what we would call our non-core assets. Currently, between this year, last year, it added up to just over $4 million in cash and marketable securities to us. This year, it's about 3.5, and going forward into 2029. From 27 to 29, another $7 million in cash and marketable securities is payable to us under these agreements. And we will continue to look to monetize parts of our portfolio that we won't be advancing ourselves. So this adds another component, sort of 2 legs to the stool, I guess you'd say, in terms of our strategy. And it's very useful. We've been able to keep our share count down. We currently have 108 million shares out only, of which management and our team own about 17%. We have a large strategic shareholder by the name of Mike Gentile. Mike's a very well-known a very principled investor in the junior sector, has done very, very well. Mike's a, as I said, he owns about 17% of the company, and is a big booster of what we do. And then we have some other high net worth family office, and what I would call small institutional investors, representing about another 20 to 25%. So the float is pretty tight. And the structure's, very good. Right now, we currently have about $1.6 million in cash. As I said, with those other payments coming in here over the course of the next, every year, really, until 2029.
Lou, I'm first of all super excited to meet you guys in the you're going to be in the Atlanta conference, is my understanding, right?
Yeah, down in Atlanta. Yes.
Michael Gentile, when Michael Gentile invests in something, it's worth looking at. So if I were to ask Michael Gentile what excites him about Magnetera, what are the main reasons why he found your story compelling?
Well, first of all, I think the discipline that we've approached in terms of our capital markets structure, we're pretty prudent guys. Plus, we're shareholders, significant shareholders, so we're very much aligned with shareholders in that perspective. But I also think, first and foremost, strategically, he is very supportive of how we have managed the company through difficult times, and utilized what I would call our non-focus assets to generate liquidity. But also, we've been very good, very in other companies, we've had a lot of exploration success. We've got a very deep technical team. As I said, we've been in Atlantic Canada now for over 20 years. We've built one mine. Our team is in the middle of building another mine in Nova Scotia, a company called Next Gold, that used to be Signal Gold, which is a company I founded. That technical team is the same team that works for Magnetera, probably the most experienced technical team in the Atlantic provinces. And we've been able to acquire projects, and a deep portfolio of projects, very economically. I think he's just really excited about, the fact that we've got multiple projects, not only that we're advancing, but others are advancing. So there's this discovery leverage on, on multiple fronts. And
yeah.
One of the things that I've said, two things that one that I'm an investor in this industry as well. That's kind of where I started. Two things that that for me make, that we try to live by in terms of when I'm evaluating a company to an asset or a company to purchase from an investor perspective. Obviously, as shareholders, you want management and the board and so forth to be shareholders. But number one for us is managing the cost of capital. I've seen many, many juniors blow their capital structure up in difficult markets, right? And that's not something we do. If the market's not supportive, we stand down, right? There's no sense, blowing up your capital structure to try and facilitate a program that's not going to generate any lift. So we've weathered the storm, and while we've been weathering that storm, we've acquired projects very cheaply, and now those projects are in demand. So that's now management, cost of capital management's number one. And then I think, just the overall opportunity. Mike used an analogy, I think, in an interview he did with on another channel. He looks at us as being like finding a $50 bill on the street. There's value. There's just untapped value, right? Is really his view. And I would agree with him. And obviously, I'm biased as the CEO and founder and significant shareholder. I think we're still underserved in terms of valuation we're being attributed, in terms of the market, in terms of the assets that we have, and the cash and marketable securities we own, and the payments that are coming in the future.
Lou, I got several questions. One, you were talking about standing down during rough times, sort of thing, when the finances didn't make sense. Did that just kind of mean you hibernated rather than, spending money on stuff that didn't make sense for you guys?
Well, we basically, we shut down what I would call expenditures on, we mitigated our overhead expenses, number one. We did enough work on our properties to maintain them. But for example, if during the worst of times, if you had a $3 million or $4 million market cap, and you needed to raise million and a half to $2 million to do a 2,000 meter drill program, why would you blow your capital structure up by
It doesn't
50%?
make sense, and I appreciate that.
And that's kind of that's our mantra, is like as our cost of capital decreases, in the sense that we can continue to get re-rated, we can get more assertive and more aggressive in terms of our exploration plans, and which is what we're doing right now. We have a plan to spend a minimum of $3 million this year on our own projects, which will likely get us through an initial drill program on at least two of them. So we're ramping up, whereas before we've been preparing for this for some time.
So you also mentioned market cap, and just kind of maybe, I don't know if the not being valued where maybe you could be. Where are you with the market cap, and where's the biggest disconnect and opportunity for investors here?
Great question. Right now, we're currently sitting around $20 million market cap. I think, on a, how would you say, on an asset, if you broke up all the assets on a one by one basis and, paired them off, any one of our assets could capture, most or all of that specific market cap. So, really, it's up to us to look at creative ways to a certain degree. Right now, we're getting what I would call is a either a prospector, sorry, a prospect generator or a holding company discount. And what I need to do, and what we're in the midst of doing, and from a strategic perspective, is to show people that no, we're not a holding company. We're not necessarily a prospect generator either, despite the fact that we've used that model to help advance our portfolio and generate liquidity. We are an exploration focused company. We are a discovery focused company, and I believe firmly, because I've done this several times and had some success, is that I believe at the discovery stage is where your shareholders have the most leverage, whether that's in one project, two or three, what have you. And at some point, like this Humber project I mentioned off the top in Newfoundland, for example, that's going to be drill ready by the fall. We make a discovery there, 7 kilometers of strike length at surface, that could be monstrous, right? And that's where, a discovery hole in something like that's what, in a market like we have right now, that's what generates significant, upside for our shareholders. And and that's just one of the projects we hold, right? So you multiply that over three, four, five projects, well, it starts to look very, very interesting. And I think that in itself is encapsulate the upside. There's more than one project that can drive this value much higher.
So, Lou, we got several questions here. First of all, you mentioned Atlantic, the Newfoundland. You mentioned Argentina. As we know, Argentina has become very mining friendly, and Newfoundland's, my understanding is the permitting is pretty quick. Is that kind of what you've been seeing with your peers? So if you can talk about the jurisdiction and the friendliness of it a bit, and then two, are you guys, is the right way to think of the company a bunch of greenfield shots, and getting ahead of the Lassonde curve, and not like complete greenfield, because you've mentioned peers that like have done really well. But if you can talk about the kind of the right way to think about it, and if you can also talk about the infrastructure that's around the area.
Sure. Well, let's deal with jurisdiction first of all. Argentina, is come back in vogue. We have a deep portfolio there, but we don't have a team there anymore. So the right thing to do is to basically put those projects out for effectively out for tender. And we've been successful, as I said, optioning one of those projects with and I'm very excited about the group that's taking the project. They've had a lot of success. We'll be a shareholder. I'll be a board member. So that's great. And we think we're going to be able to do that over again with one or more of those projects down there. So that in itself is moving forward. Where our focus is, our team, our experiences, Atlantic Canada, Newfoundland and New Brunswick both lie in the top 20, 25 in terms of Fraser Institute evaluations of jurisdictional risk in for mining and mining exploration. We've got a lot of experience in Newfoundland, having been there since 2007. From a permitting perspective, it's a dream. The interface with the levels of government you need to move projects forward is very clean, very fast. It's ideal. You've got good transportation network throughout the province, good local workforce. It's got a Newfoundland, people don't realize it's got a long mining history. And it's just kind of been underrepresented, underexplored, and it's now coming into full. I mean, there's been multiple discoveries there. Valentine Lake, which is now Equinox. That's 5 million ounces and counting, and that's gonna get bigger and bigger. Newfound Gold, Firefly on the critical metal side up on the Bayvert Peninsula, that looks to be something, a monster as well. So now all of a sudden, the regional focus has gone from just juniors playing to the bigger companies going, okay, what's going on here? So we've now got intermediates and majors coming in, looking, being interested in Newfoundland. That's starting to happen in New Brunswick as well. New Brunswick is a little later to the game in the sense that it wasn't always the most friendly jurisdiction for mining, but that has changed 180 degrees in the last 2 years. And in fact, I quote the new premier who just spoke at the PDAC. We're open for mining. We want to generate, $1 or $2 billion. I can't remember. Don't quote me, but I can't remember what word she used. But $1 billion in GDP from mining by 2028. Mining and mining exploration in the province. So they're fully behind it. And again, our relationship with the levels of government. Yeah, the DNR and the environment ministries and so forth have been excellent. I mean, they go out of their way to ask us, how they can help us. The other issue that most people don't talk about is obviously the issue around in indigenous relationships and so forth. And that's something we've done very, very well in predecessor companies. I mentioned earlier Signal Next Gold. They were the first company in the history of Nova Scotia to sign a benefits agreement with every First Nation. So we carry that, very highly, in terms of, requiring social license. I won't even call it a necessity. It's what you should do, when you are, looking to develop a disruptive operation on private or public lands. You need all parties who are going to be affected by that operation to be part of the planning and the execution, effective buy-in. So, we've done very well that way. I can't speak more highly enough about New Brunswick and Newfoundland and Nova Scotia now as well in terms of, where they've come in their how they've how would I say open their arms to mining and mining exploration across the suite of commodities. So it's a I hate to say it, but it's a dream to work there. It really is.
Lou, if that's very helpful. Could you speak about kind of the infrastructure in the areas, as well as is it the right way to think of it? Complete greenfield here, but it doesn't sound like that. So if you can just kind of break that down for me.
Yeah, no, that's great. Look, as I said, Newfoundland and New Brunswick have long mining histories. In the northern part of New Brunswick, for example, you've got the Bathurst mining camp. That's been, as I said, it's one of the largest VMS camps in the world. It's been going for 70 or 80 years. Been six or seven mines developed there. There's existing mill infrastructure. It's a camp, and we were attracted to it, for that reason, but also that we believe it's not yet mined out, right? I mean, where you that age-old adage, the best place to find a mine is beside an old mine, right? So that's one of the reasons why we're in that part of the province. But there, throughout New Brunswick, there's been prospecting. You've got antimony mines now being developed. The southern part of the province, you've got significant gold occurrences. Galway Metals, for example, has got the Clarence Stream project, which is now well over 2 million ounces, and it'll probably be much more than that when they complete and announce their updated resource sometime this in the next quarter or so. Newfoundland, same thing. It's rich mining history, and within the last 10 to 12 years, it's become a go-to place for exploration and discovery. As I mentioned, Valentine Lake, which is now Equinox, 5 million plus ounces and counting. The discovery that Newfound Gold has made at Queensway, Firefly's project up in the Ming, in you know Ming's Bight in the Bayford Peninsula. I mean, this is just a these are these are just a few of the things that are going on. And the key there is the plumbing system. You have the geology to support these types of major discoveries.
Lou, if you can briefly kind of give us the pathway to, I don't know if the next step is PEA feasibility for, I know you said you're going to drill about a fall for one of these guys, but if you can give us the permitting, just kind of the pathway sort of thing briefly, and if we're going to go to the finances after that.
Yeah, sure. So we're early. We're more much more focused at the early stage, and I wouldn't call them green fields, but it's definitely early stage exploration. So we're very systematic. We believe in doing things the right way. So, for example, it's data compilation followed by boots on the ground work, prospecting, mapping. So doing doing geophysics, following up with geochemical surveys, soil samples, etc. So we've done, for the most part, we've done all of that early stage work on our projects. And so what leads next is you develop targets based on that work. All of that data, all of that information allows you to develop targets that you then systematically go and drill. So that's kind of where we're at. We're now in the stage where we're developing significant targets on all of our projects to follow up here in the near term with preliminary drill programs. So we're getting to the point where we can make a drill discovery, which to me is the most exciting part of this industry. When you can make a drill discovery, discover something new, that is when you capture the attention of the marketplace. So we've got multiple projects basically lining up for that potential drill discovery stage.
Awesome. Lou, let's go to the finances, the balance sheet. If you can tell us what you have, how far it takes you, and then if you can walk us down the share structure a bit. I know that you said that insiders own 17% or so. If you can correct me if that's not correct.
That's
You
right.
mentioned Michael Gentile, but any other major shareholders? How active are you guys in the open market? And if you can also make sure you go over the options, warrants, and if everyone in the registry.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got 108 million out, and that's in issue. 118 fully diluted. So in terms of options, RSUs, there's about, call it 10 million options issued. Basically to management and the key technical advisors in our board. Those are all struck. A lot of those are higher in price than the markets now because those represented issuances for earlier times. But I'd say the average price on our full sort of equity incentive program is right around 11 or 12 cents a share, so a little bit below where the market is trading now. We only have about 600,000 warrants out, so there's not many warrants, which I'm not a big purveyor of issuing warrants on a financing. I like to not issue warrants, and I can explain that later if you want. But management and the board 17%, Gentile 17%. The guys at Power One Capital in Toronto, Pat DiCapo and his group, they own probably close to 9%. And then we've got a number of what I would call quasi institutions, high net worth folks over in Europe, several owning 3 to 5%. So it's, in terms of being able to put my hands around, call it 10 shareholders or 10, groups, I can easily circle 50% of the float, in a very short time.
Lou, you got a pretty tight share structure. Is the I know that you're seem well funded enough to take you a bit. Is the what's the plan for growth, or to are you going to need to raise more capital at some point?
Well, I think, that's the million-dollar question in our industry, right? Is like, as an exploration company, you're generally not generating revenue. We are generating sort of cash, and we have a marketable securities position, right? That's, on our balance sheet right now. It's roughly about it represents about $4 million in marketable securities. We've got just over 1.5 million, almost 1.6 million in cash, hard cash. We've got a small royalty portfolio as well. Not that the royalties and the marketable securities are necessarily liquid, but they are, they certainly are assets available to us. We've got, payments coming in, as I mentioned, over the course of the balance of this year and through to 2029 of an additional $7+ million. So, additional, liquidity, marketable securities, et cetera, in terms of those payments, and the anticipation that we'll probably do one or more additional deals that will generate, further cash or share issuances to us. But we also want to chase our and advance our projects, right? And 1.5 million is not enough to do that. So, like any exploration company, we will, at some point, this year we will be in the market to do some sort of financing. Generally speaking, what we like to do is what's called a charity flow through here in Canada, which is something that's done at a premium to the market, and we bring in what are called the back end buyers, to buy those shares at market price from the charity donors, right? So that's how we funded the company. Our last two financing is through charity flow through, and that money goes straight into exploration, goes straight into the ground.
Lou, this has been awesome. For the listeners who are just being introduced to Magnetera and at this natural resource stocks, I want to be clear that I am not being paid for this. Magnetera is not paying for this interview here. Magnetera, I am not currently an investor, although that may change in the near future. Please do your due diligence. I am not giving investment advice. One of the ways you can do that is to reach out to Lou, to follow their story, to go on their website, to follow their ticker. Lou, if you'd be so kind as to give us one more time your point of contact, your website, and where you're trading.
Absolutely. Website's www.magnaterraminerals.com, and our ticker is Mother Tom Tom on the TSX Venture Exchange here in Canada. We also do change. We do have an OTC ticker as well, but it trades by appointment down there. The liquid market here is the TSX Venture.
Awesome. Lou, look forward to following your story further and looking forward to meeting you in person in Atlanta, Georgia. It's been awesome, and I look forward to getting to know you guys better. Thanks, guys.
Well, likewise, look forward to seeing you in Atlanta, Steve. Thank you.